Oh, no.
But I'm just trying to tell you how it was. And like I say, I'll be 80 come June 24th. I knew two slaves in my life.
Really?
Yeah, two slaves. One was Aunt Emmeline that took care of us while my mother and father were off working. And one was another old man. His name was Dad. We called him Dad. That was all he knew.
Did they live in Brooklyn or?
No. This was in Taylorsville, North Carolina. This woman, my daddy brought her there to take care of us. She had been sold, and she used to sit and tell us about, I'm wasting your time.
Oh, no.
She used to tell us about how she was sold in Virginia and how she walked to Alabama and how at night she would, the master would put a tarpaulin around the wagon and they would get up under the wagon and sleep and he would sleep up in the wagon. And when the war ended, she had made her way back. Now the war ended in 1865. She had made her way back as far as Taylorsville, North Carolina. And to me, to look at her and think about it, she was in her, God, she had to be, looked like to me 100 years old then. But she was on her way trying to get back to Virginia to see if her people were still living because they had been separated from her mother, brothers and sisters, and so was somebody else and whatnot. But she would sit and talk to us about slavery. Lord, I never will forget her. She was an old woman, smoked a pipe, wore red big man shoes. I never will forget her. She wore red broken shoes. Yeah, it was something.
Now, did the police brutality ever become fatal? Were people shot in the
I lost two classmates to the police. But you see, back then, the police would say, well, I was running after him and I tripped and my gun went off. That was the end of it. That was the end of it. You couldn't get away with that now. So, yeah, it was bad. It was bad. I used to look at the policemen come in and beat up on the men on the playground. The men be sitting up under the light playing checkers.
Would they try to separate races? For example, if you were talking to a white person,
That was a no-no. You couldn't do that. But yet, still, they were still getting together now. They were still partying. Yes, they were. They were still getting together. And most of your policemen, they'd go and if this woman was running the bootleg joint, they'd hang out there all day long, drink, look, and play around with the black girls. You know what I mean? All day long, all night long, and whatnot. That's what would happen. But they tried their best to keep them separated. And I look back on it now, and I still get a little nervous and scared because now that was one thing that bothered me. I always was afraid I was going to be accused of something that I didn't do. Because back then, if you didn't do it, they'd beat you and make you say you did it anyhow. Now, I know that's for a fact. Yeah, they didn't have DNA and stuff now. But now, when you accuse somebody, you better be right. You better have something to back it up with. But that was the times, and that was the way things were. That's just the way things were. It was terrible. God.
Did any blacks fight back against the white officers?
Some of them tried, but couldn't cut them out. The way they beat you, take them down to the station, beat the fire out of you. They'd try to run from them or something like that. They would do that. They'd try to run. But that didn't help any. It was just bad. It just bad.
Did the Klan influence the police?
Yeah.
Were the police Klan?
The police was Klan. The police, most all the police were Klan. And maybe I shouldn't say that most all police were Klan, but the Klan was an influence. Klan influenced a lot. Yeah.
Would they hold rallies anywhere near here?
Not that I know of. I'd see one once in a while, especially when the civil rights movement started. I'd see one walking, sometime I'd be home, and I did see one over in Elizabeth there at the theater. He walked in, And Pickett did that theater. I don't know why Pickett did that theater. But he did that. He had his cap on and his computer, some stupid things on.
But did they ever patrol the streets looking for trouble?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. But not here in Charlotte. But now I did run up on a Klan rally up in Morganton, outside of Morganton, North Carolina. That's about 65, 70 miles, 80 miles from here. I did one night and ran right up into it. And God, after I got that in the weather to stay, run or what. But they didn't bother me. They didn't bother me. I just like Dickie Dallas in Taylorsville. He never did bother us, but, you know, intimidated and frightened us to death.
Do you remember any instances where, I mean, you felt your life was threatened, I mean, in your own house? You thought that this is going to be it, you know, my family's threatened?
Yeah, when they had that, I called it a riot, when they just couldn't take it anymore. These policemen would come down there and stay in this cat house all day long with this woman next door, lived right next door to us. And we ran them out of there and tore up their car, tore up their house and whatnot. And I always looked for them to come back and get us, but they never did. They never did. Well, one thing about it, the paper exposed them. The paper exposed them, and I never will forget them. The policeman's name was Baker. He ran off and left his hat, Baker. And the Charlotte Observer, and that's in the Observer. You can go down there and pull it up.
It's a prostitution house.
She wasn't running a prostitute house, but she was. I guess she might have been a prostitute because no other women were involved. But I know that the policeman beat her husband, and she was a nice looking girl. She looked like Halle Berry. I never will forget. She was a nice looking woman, and her husband was a nice looking man. But the policeman beat her husband one time. And we always told John that, John, we'd be able to fight this, fight back. And
you just hit the breaking point.
We hit the breaking point, and she had been over there all day long, leaning up with these policemen. And I took my daddy's car and went up on the corner and got all the boys off the corner and brought them down there. And they ran wild. They would have burned the house down hitting them. My daddy. See, my daddy wasn't home, but my daddy came up when the fighting was going on, when the routing was going on, and told the fellas, please, please, just don't do this, don't do this. And I'm surprised that the police, somebody didn't call the police, and the police come out. The police didn't. And these two policemen, it was two of them. And
God, we just didn't want that in your community.
I know, we didn't want that. And my daddy had told her, as long as our children playing out in the street in front of, and you're seeing this, they're looking at this, you can't do this. And I don't know what she said to him, but he had spoken to him a couple of times. Not only he, but some others had gone down there and spoken to him and told him, you can't do this, we're not going to stand for this now. And he came to the boiling point, and it boiled over. But that's about the only time that I was afraid of my life, that they might come back and get me. Yeah.
Do you remember your first experiences with the black peace officers in Charlotte?
Yeah, because James Ross, he was a little bit kin to me. And when they first came on, they did not have pistols. They couldn't arrest whites, and they couldn't do anything like that. They were just mostly like crossing guards.
Here's a picture of them.
Yeah. This is some of the first ones. Yeah. There's some of them on there. The two at the back, I remember, and the two at the front.
Did they like being officers?
I guess they did. Now, I'll tell you this. I can remember whenever James Ross put the word out, I'm going to make you respect me. I am a full-fledged, they had done made a full-fledged federal police officer then, and give them pistols and everything else. And you had that segment out there of blacks who were the thugs that were not going to respect them. And the thugs, they didn't respect them. And they would if James Ross would ask him, come on, please go home and whatnot, and give him a break. Now, Bob Houston, he'd take money out of his pocket. I've seen him do it. He would take money out of his pocket and give the cab driver the 10 cent. Of course, you're a dime to ride. You can go anywhere in the city for a dime. Give the cab driver a dime and tell him, take this man on home. But there was that segment out there that did not respect him. I'm talking about these are black folks.
Did you see it as sort of, you know, the change is starting, a ray of hope that...
I saw the ray of hope when they gave him the gun and he had passed the word out. The word got out, I forgot how it seemed like I was in a meeting or something, wherein that he said that you were going to respect me. This is James Ross, the first one that was hired. He had to drive his own car when he was first hired. I never will forget that. He drove his own car. He would come and make calls in his own car and patrol the black neighborhoods. You wouldn't know what neighborhoods now. And before he died, he was like Wyatt Earp. I think he killed about 11 men.
Wow.
That's right. Justifiably so. They were trying to kill him. He did his job. As far as I'm concerned, he did his job. Because in the first place, and that's what I was trying to tell you a while ago when I said that whoever thought of the idea of let's bring on some black policemen, they had a lot of nerve to do it, and they had a lot of foresight, and they had to. But the way they did it, people, even black people, looked at them as just being like crossing guards. They had no authority. You get what I mean? And when they did give them the authority, they had...
This is to write tickets and
arrest. Yeah, they could make arrests and do everything. They. I think a lot of blacks, not a lot, but there's always that segment of blacks that did not want to accept them in authority. And they still want to do whatever they wanted to do with no respect. And that is what caused the problem. But like I say, before he died, they respected him. They gave him the credit that he was due.
And did they share that respect with the other officers?
They share that respect with the other officers. Now a policeman is just a policeman. I used to be out on the highway riding and somebody come on and say, breaker 19, there's a Smokey up front. There, somebody said, is he black or white? I'd break in and say, breaker 19, he got teeth regardless of what color he is, he gonna match you. But yes, and when I saw black policemen, not crossing guards now, when I saw the black policemen begin to have that authority and begin to, it gave me a good feeling, and I had a good feeling that yes, there is hope.
Did you feel safer?
I felt safer because there were, a black policeman. Now, some of them had nasty, arrogant attitudes, but the majority of them were people that, look, I'm glad to see them. I knew them, and if I didn't know them, then at least they looked like me, and I could holler to them, hello, and whatnot, and as long as I wasn't breaking the law, it didn't matter. You get what I mean? Because I never was a person who would break the law. You can go from the East Coast to the West Coast and ask all police out there, you ever see Price Davis? Did you ever have him? Yeah, we had him. What you having for? Tail light out. I've lost the flap off his truck. Overloaded. Yeah, is that it? That's it. You get what I mean? Is this thing of going to jail for something? No, I've worked with honest, decent living for my living. So, yeah, I respected them. I always did respect them, even when they first come on, I respect them. You get what I mean? I'd come out to the movie and one of them tell me, all right, it's time to go home now. Go home. You got to go to school in the morning. Go home. And I'd do just that. What am I arguing with him for? You get what I mean?
They're really amiable. You could go up and talk to them.
Absolutely. Then I would come home. I begin to see the change in the white policeman too. I begin to get stopped a lot, but I'd get stopped because I was out of town driving a nice car. I kept a nice new car, even starting in 1947. I bought me a car on the black market. Never will forget. And when the policemen would come, they would. a white policeman. They was treating me as if I was a human being. And he'd get out, be so and so and so, and where you going, all this kind of stuff. They didn't get out with that. They'd stop you. And the mayor said, your license registration on short term, and when they'd look at it, check me out, he'd say, okay, you're on your way. You get what I mean? And I saw the change. I saw the change come. I really did. I saw the change come. And I forget who it was told me, said, well, you can't just walk up and get a job now because your brother-in-law knows somebody uptown there. You got to take a test, and you got to have some education, and you got to go to the academy and all this kind of stuff. And I said, well, thank God, at least, thank God, you know? And I saw the change come, and now when a policeman pulled me over, he says, a cop, that's it. I don't be afraid or nothing like that. But I used to be, God, I used to be coming home, get stopped. Anytime I got below the Mason-Dixon line, I got nervous. And I remember my boss, God rest his soul in peace, when I got my first car, he gave me my Christmas bonus, and he gave me a package wrapped up. He said, here, you got this, and nobody else got it. And I opened it up, it was a chauffeur cap. He said, you got your new car? He said, now don't wear this until you get ready to go down south. When you go down south, put the chauffeur cap on, you know, and make them think that you were working for some white person. And I did. And I kept that old cap for a long time until things got cool down, you know, things got better. But like I say, Charlotte was, God, just let me out of this hell hole. That's all I wanted.
You came back every now and then?
I'd come back maybe once every month or every couple of months. I would come home to see my folks.
Would they tell you how things were changing?
My mother and father. My daddy died in 1950, but my mother died in 1980. But my mother and father would tell me that things are beginning to change. Things are changing. Things are changing. And I said, I knew things would change. I knew we couldn't go on like this. You can't. It's impossible. It's impossible to go on like this. And things did change. Yeah. Things changed. So I'm glad. And it changed for the better. It changed for the better because as it was going, something was bound to happen. Something had to give. Something had to give. And let me put it like this. Nowadays, people are upset and afraid of this terrorism and whatnot out here. I grew up terrorized, especially there in Taylorsville. Because these cluckers would come out there and stand, these Ku Klux would come out there and stand in front of our house and on the weekends and whatnot to intimidate my father. I found that out later on in life. And I grew up in this, in that kind of atmosphere. And now, I don't want to die. And I don't want nobody throwing no bombs on nobody else. You get what I mean? Because I know what it's like. I know what it's like to be intimidated and scared and frightened and whatnot. But right now, we have a mess out here. We have a mess. And I'm not sticking my tongue out and say, hey, lad, I've done all the rest of you. Got to see what I went through. No, that's not what I want. No, I want them to get rid of this terrorism and whatnot. And I don't think they're worried about it. Where they're going to get rid of it, killing some of Bin Laden is not going to stop it. It's not going to stop somebody else walking right up and taking his place out. So it's a sad situation. But I, like I say, I lived through it. Now I'm not afraid. I don't want to die, but it doesn't bother me that much.
Now, do you remember, were you at Second Ward when they were tearing it down? Did you see it?
I came in. They had torn it down when I got here. They were torn it down and were cleaning it up when I came in.
Do you remember the last time you went to the school and walked in?
I went to the school and the school had changed. They had a cafeteria. They had the gym. They didn't have that when I was there. And they had a lot of new teachers. And I don't know whether the curriculum was different or not. I don't know. I imagine it was. But they didn't have computers and things, Bunsen burners and things like that. They had one when I was there, and they still had one before they closed. And that's about like it was.
I went yesterday and I saw the marker over by the Aquatic Center.
Yeah.
And were there any cafes or local hangouts where the kids would go and relax, or like a gym or?
No, not too much in that neighborhood. No.
It's mostly residential.
It was mostly residential. Yeah, but you did have the theaters there, and you had the cafes and things like that where adults hung out and whatnot. And like I said,